Chapter 45. My memory now, out of the vague far past, the beautiful past, the lamented past. I remember it so well. That night we met together, it was in Boston, and Mr. Fiennes was there, and Mr. Osgood, Ralph Keeler, and Boyle O'Reilly, lost to us now these many years, and under the seal of confidence revealed to each other what our boyhood dreams had been. Dreams which had not as yet been blighted, but over which was stealing the gray of the night that was to come, a night which we prophetically felt, and this feeling oppressed us, and made us sad. I remember that Howell's voice broke twice, and it was only with great difficulty that he was able to go on. In the end he wept, for he had hoped to be an auctioneer. He told of his early struggles to climb to his goal, and how at last he attained to within a single step of the coveted summit. But there misfortune after misfortune assailed him, and he went down, and down, and down, until now at last, weary and disheartened, he had for the present given up the struggle, and become the editor of the Atlantic Monthly. This was in 1830. 70 years are gone since, and where now is his dream? It will never be fulfilled. And it is best so. He is no longer fitted for the position. No one would take him now. Even if he got it, he would not be able to do himself credit in it, on account of his deliberateness of speech and lack of trained professional vivacity. He would be put on real estate, and would have the pain of seeing younger and abler men interested with the furniture and other such goods which draw a mixed and intellectually low order of customers, who must be beguiled of their bits by a vulgar and specialized humor and sparkle, accompanied with antics. But it is not the thing lost that counts, but only the disappointment the loss brings to the dreamer that had coveted that thing, and had set his heart of hearts upon it. And when we remember this, a great wave of sorrow for Howells rises in our breasts, and we wish for his sake that his fate could have been different. At that time A's boyhood dream was not yet past hope of realization, but it was fading, dimming, wasting away, and the wind of a growing apprehension was blowing cold over the perishing summer of his life. In the pride of his young ambition he had aspired to be a steamboat mate, and in fancy saw himself dominating a forecastle someday on the Mississippi and dictating terms to roustabouts in high and wounding terms. I look back now, from this far distance of 70 years, and note with sorrow the stages of that dream's destruction. Hay's history is but Howell's, with differences of detail. Hay climbed high toward his ideal, when success seemed almost sure, his foot upon the very gangplank, his eye upon the capstan, misfortune came and his fall began. Down, 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 ever down. Private secretary to the president. Colonel in the field, charge d'affaires in Paris, charge d'affaires in Vienna, poet, editor of the Tribune, biographer of Lincoln, ambassador to England, and now at last there he lies, secretary of state, head of foreign affairs. And he has fallen like Lucifer, never to rise again. And his dream, where now is his dream? Gone down in blood and tears with the dream of the auctioneer. And the young dream of Aldrich, where is that? I remember yet how he sat there that night fondling it, petting it, seeing it recede and ever recede, trying to be reconciled, and give it up, but not able yet to bear the thought, for it had been his hope, to be a horse doctor. He also climbed high, but, like the others, fell, then fell again, and yet again, and again and again. And now at last he can fall no further. He is old now, he has ceased to struggle, and is only a poet. No one would risk a horse with him now. His dream is over. Has any boyhood dream ever been fulfilled? I must doubt it. Look at Brander Matthews. He wanted to be a cowboy. What is he today? Nothing but a professor in a university. Will he ever be a cowboy? It is hardly conceivable. Look at Stockton. What was Stockton's young dream? He hoped to be a barkeeper. See where he has landed. Is it better with Cable? What was Cable's young dream? To be ringmaster in the circus, and swell around and crack the whip. What is he today? Nothing but a theologian and novelist. And Uncle Remus, what was his young dream? To be a buccaneer. Look at him now. Ah, the dreams of our youth, how beautiful they are, and how perishable. The ruins of these might have beens, how pathetic. The heart secrets that were revealed that night now so long vanished, how they touch me as I give them voice. Those sweet privacies, how they endeared us to each other. We were under oath never to tell any of these things, and I have always kept that oath inviolate when speaking with persons whom I thought not worthy to hear them. Oh, our lost youth, God keep its memory green in our hearts. For age is upon us, with the indignity of its infirmities, and death beckons. To the above old people, sleep. For the sun, that scores another day against the tale allotted you to stay, reminding you, is risen, and now serves notice, ah, ignore it while you stay. The chill wind blew, and those who stood before the tavern murmured, having drunk his score, why tarries he with empty cup? Behold, the wine of youth once poured, is poured no more, come, leave the cup, and on the winter snow your summer garment of enjoyment throw. Your tide of life is ebbing fast, and it, exhausted once, for you no more shall flow. Apostrophe, apostrophe, while yet the phantom of false youth was mine, I heard a voice from out the darkness whine, O youth, O whither gone? Return, and bathe my age in thy reviving wine. Apostrophe, apostrophe, in this subduing draught of tender green and kindly absinthe, with its wimpling sheen of dusky half-lights, let me drown the haunting pathos of the might-have-been. For every nickel joy, marred and brief, we pay someday its weight in golden grief mined from our hearts. Ah, murmur not from this one-sided bargain dream of no relief. The joy of life, that streaming through their veins tumultuous swept, falls slack and wanes the glory in the eye, and one by one life's pleasures perish and make place for pains. Whether one hide in some secluded nook, whether at Liverpool or Sandy Hook, 'tis one. Old age will search him out, and he, when ready, will know where to look. From cradle unto grave I keep a house of entertainment, where may drowse bacilli and kindred germs, or feed, or breed their festering species in a deep carouse. Think in this battered caravanserai, whose portals open stand all night and day, how microbe after microbe with his pomp arrives unasked, and comes to stay. Our ivory teeth, confessing to the lust of masticating, once, now own disgust of clay-plugged cavities, full soon our snacks are emptied, and our mouths are filled with dust. Our gums forsake the teeth and tender grow, and fat, like overripe figs. We know the sign, the rich disease is ours, and we must list this sorrow, add another woe. Our lungs begin to fail, and soon we cough, and chilly streaks play up our backs, and off our fevered foreheads drips an icy sweat we scoffered before, but now we may not scoff. Some for the bunions that afflict us prate of plasters unsurpassable, and hate to cut a corn, ah cut, and let the plaster go, nor murmur if the solace come too late. Some for the honors of old age, and some long for its respite from the hum and clash of sordid strife. O fools, the past should teach them what's to come. Lo, for the honors, cold neglect instead. For respite, disputatious airs a bed of thorns for them will furnish. Go, seek not here for peace, but yonder with the dead. For whether Zal and Rustum heed this sign, and even smitten thus, will not repine, let Zal and Rustum shuffle as they may, the fine once levied they must cash the fine. O voices of the long ago that were so dear, found silent now, for many a mouldering year, O whither are ye flown? Come back, and break my heart, but bless my grieving ear. Some happy day my voice will silent fall, and answer not when some that love it call. Be glad for me when this, you note and think I found the voices lost, beyond the pall. So let me grateful drain the magic bowl, that medicines hurt minds, and on the soul the healing of its peace, doth lay if then death claim me welcome be his dole. Santa Sweden, September 15th. Private. If you don't know what Rick's disease of the teeth is, the dentist will tell you. I've had it and it is more than interesting. M. TT, editorial note, fearing that there might be some mistake, we submitted a proof of this article to the American gentleman named in it, and asked them to correct any errors of detail that might have crept in among the facts. They reply with some asperity that errors cannot creep in among facts where there are no facts for them to creep in among, and that none are discoverable in this article, but only baseless aberrations of a disordered mind. They have no recollection of any such night in Boston, nor elsewhere, and in their opinion there was never any such night. They have met Mr. Twain, but have had the prudence not to interest any privacies to him, particularly under oath, and they think they now see that this prudence was justified, since he has been untrustworthy enough to even betray privacies which had no existence. Further, they think it a strange thing that Mr. Twain, who was never invited to meddle with anybody's boyhood dreams but his own, has been so gratuitously anxious to see that other people's are placed before the world, that he has quite lost his head in his zeal, and forgotten to make any mention of his own at all. Provided we insert this explanation, they are willing to let his article pass, otherwise they must require its suppression in the interest of truth. P.S.S. These replies having left us in some perplexity, and also in some fear lest they distress Mr. Twain, if published without his privity, we judged it but fair to submit them to him, and give him an opportunity to defend himself. But he does not seem to be troubled, or even aware, that he is in a delicate situation. He merely says, "Do not worry about those former young people. They can write good literature, but when it comes to speaking the truth, they have not had my training." Mark Twain. Apostrophe. The last sentence seems obscure and liable to an unfortunate construction. It plainly needs refashioning, but we cannot take the responsibility of doing it. Editor. In memoriam, Olivia Susan Clemens died August 18, 1896. Age 24, in a fair valley, oh, how long ago, how long ago, where all the broad expanse was clothed in vines, and fruitful fields and meadows starred with flowers, and clear streams wandered at their idle will, and still lakes slept, their burnished surfaces a dream of painted clouds, and soft airs went whispering with odorous breath, and all was peace in that fair vale, shut from the troubled world, a nameless hamlet drowsed. Hard by, apart, a temple stood, and strangers from the outer world passing, noted it with tired eyes, and seeing, saw it not. A glimpse of its fair form an answering momentary thrill, and they passed on, careless and unaware. They could not know the cunning of its mate, they could not know the secret shut up in its heart, only the dwellers of the hamlet knew. They knew that what seemed brass was gold, what marble seemed, was ivory. The glories that enriched the milky surfaces, the trailing vines, and interwoven flowers, and tropic birds a-wing, clothed all in tinted fires, they knew for what they were, not what they seemed. Encrustings all of gems, not perishable splendors of the brush. They knew the secret spot where one must stand, they knew the surest hour, the proper slant of sun, to gather in, unmarred, undimmed, the vision of the fane in all its fairy grace, a fainting dream against the opal sky. And more than this, they knew that in the temple's inmost place a spirit dwelt, made all of light. For glimpses of it, they had caught beyond the curtains when the priests that served the altar came and went. All loved that light, and held it dear, that had this partial grace, but the adoring priests alone who lived by day and night submerged in its immortal glow knew all its power and depth, and could appraise the loss, if it should fade and fail and come no more. All this was long ago, so long ago. The light burned on, and they that worshipped it, and they that caught its flash at intervals, and held it dear, contented lived in its secure possession. Ah, how long ago it was! And then when they were nothing fearing, and God's peace was in the air, and none was prophesying harm, the vast disaster fell. Where stood the temple, when the sun went down was vacant, desert when it rose again. Ah yes! 'Tis ages since it chanced. So long ago it was, that from the memory of the hamlet folk the light has passed. They scarce believe in now, that once it was, or if believing, yet not missing it, unreconciled to have it gone. Not so the priests. Oh, not so. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.